Oh, actually, this comes out on April Fool's Day, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we're lying. These videos don't exist.
It's everything we say on this episode is not to be trusted.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, a weekly look at everything going on inside the world of CinemaSins. I'm Aaron Dyster, and I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And Danae Hughes.
Still prepping for this very show.
We write for CinemaSins and TV Sins and do various other things inside the CinemaSins universe as well. Danae, I said we could wait. I just want to be clear so that it's clear that I wasn't like, no, we have to start the show, that I said we could wait for you to finish prepping. You know, that was definitely an offer that was made to you.
You were nice to do so.
And but you said, no, start the show.
Start the show. I'll just wing it.
You know, it's interesting. Do you think that people who listen to this show think that we prepare as much as we do? Or do you think they feel like we watch the videos and then we wing our conversations? Like, what do you think the perspective is on how those conversations go?
I think that there are people that think that we don't even prepare to put our videos out on YouTube. The odds that there's a really great percentage of people who just think that we turn the mics on and then just start talking is pretty high.
Although I would say the people that listen to this probably don't think that the videos.
Yeah, there's probably a higher percentage of people that listen to this that know the work that goes in to the videos.
I mean, there's
and such.
People out there that think all YouTubers, you know, just have it so easy. And there's a whole thing going on right now too. I love this with professional sports. You know, the NFL just announced they might do a 17th game. The players are voicing their concerns, and then there's this whole, like, you know, players, they just get to play a game for millions of dollars. You know, they're not people entitled to an opinion. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I definitely think there are people who feel like Jeremy loads up a movie and then says stuff while he's watching a movie and then just edits it a little bit, you know, for a couple minutes and throws it on YouTube. Like, I think there are people who would believe that. I guess that's a compliment, right? Like, that's what we're going for.
I guess.
And it's also people that have never thought about what editing actually is.
Right, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they just
I don't mean that mean. I mean,
Of course.
I don't know, you know, what chemical engineering is, so, you know. But I also don't think chemical engineers just wake up and, you know, chemical engineer 2 seconds later.
I'm going to grab this proton and this neutron. I'm going to smush them together. That's all you do at your job, right?
And editing and chemical engineering, I'm not comparing the two. Just want to make that very clear.
There are some similarities.
Probably,
sure. Yeah.
There's those memes that it's like what someone thinks I do, what such and such think I do. We should do one of those for CinemaSins.
That's true. Oh, that's a good point.
Right. Everyone who listens to this show listens to find out more behind the scenes stuff.
Right.
So I think everyone is pretty much aware that we've done the math, and I don't remember the math. Was it a
pretty much like a century of work goes into every video.
Was it 24 hours of work goes into every video?
I don't remember when we actually did the math, but it was...
If you're counting the edits and reviewing the edits and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, we kind of went through and calculated it, and it is an effort. We also do prepare for this show, some more than others.
Well, today you get to hear the difference in prepared or not prepared, apparently.
And let me know if you can tell a difference, because if you can't, I might change
never
my
prepare
plan.
Again. well, we've got a lengthy show to get into.
We had 3 extra days to prepare, too.
That is true for this recording. We also have 3 extra videos because we are going to talk about the Sin Week videos. Now, we will start with those, and those are interesting because only a certain percentage of the audience that listens to this podcast has access to those videos. That's just a simple matter of how the Sin Club works. And if you're a member of the Sin Club, then you have either seen these or have access to see these. I will say these will be available. I'm trying to think when this... Oh, actually, this comes out on April Fool's Day, doesn't it? This Thursday. So technically...
Yeah, so we're lying. These videos don't exist.
It's everything we say on this episode is not to be trusted, just like every episode. No, we are moving those videos to the peeper level of the Sin Club, which is $10 a month or more in April. But you know what? I'll wait a week in April. So if you're listening to this, those should still be available for every member of the Sin Club for a little bit longer. But very shortly, they are going to be for the $10 a month.
We have that kind of power. We could just make it go another week.
Listen, I'm the one that pushes the button. So
has the power finally gone to your head?
A little bit. A little bit. It definitely has. Let's go ahead and do those first.
Well, I want to say, too, thank you to everybody who was able to come. I know not everybody is a Patreon member, but it was so much fun to digitally hang out with everybody.
Yes,
and it was. If you, for whatever reason, would like to see the live taping of last week's BTS episode or the mini podcast where Aaron and Chris and Jonathan and Barrett reviewed the Snyder Cut, or if you want to see our staff-wide Ask Us Anything. And then also Aaron did a live cinementary of La La Land with Chris, Jeremy and Barrett.
Yep.
So we had
a
lot of
Sincast.
And a Sincast on Tuesday. Yeah. So it was a full week of like live tapings and recordings and such. You can actually still access those, and it's at any level right now. So for example, you could join for $3 a month at patreon.com/cinemasins. See everything from Sin Week, and then after I think the end of this month, so just
well, that's what I was just talking about. It should technically be on Thursday, but I'll push it off for a little bit. So you've got, you know,
I see what you're saying now.
That's what I was saying. So
sorry.
No, that's all right. Damn it. Hey, it bears repeating. It bears repeating.
Does it? Because everyone's going, Danae, this is an example of you not paying attention to the show. Immediately. Anyhow, go watch it because it was a lot of fun, and then it'll go to different tiers and you won't be able to see it anymore forever and ever.
I mean, amen. Unless you become a member of the peeper tier or above, which a lot of people have, and we appreciate that. So thanks for that support.
Peepers.
Let's get into it with the Sinside Scoop.
What's he building in there?
We're going to take a look at the videos from the week, including the three Sin Week videos, the process of sending them, how we felt about the stuff we were sending in general. We'll kick it off with the Sin Week stuff. These are all the bonus videos for the week. You will not see these public on YouTube. You will see these if you're a Sin Club member. We'll kick it off with the what I am calling the Battle at the El Royale, which is not the name of the movie. It's Bad Times at the El Royale, but for some reason my brain wants to say battle. Who knows why? This was a Jeremarin script.
Do you really not know why you want to say that, or are you just joking?
Do you know why I want to say that? Do you have an insight into my psychology?
Well, Battle Royale is a property and a movie.
That's
and a comic
probably
book.
It.
Yeah.
That's probably it. Thank you.
Jonathan, he can sleep at night now.
Now I can sleep at night.
Maybe you've seen the American version, The Hunger Games.
That's true. I've seen, in fact, both versions of Battle Royale.
Want me to start with Jeremy's thoughts?
I do. Okay. Yeah, what did Jeremy have to say about this?
Jeremy said this movie is fucking phenomenal. Drew Goddard is the next Nolan or Fincher, and I'm positive on this. He began his career writing for Buffy and Angel, then he directed Cabin in the Woods, then he directed this movie. He shows an eerie confidence in pacing and in laying out the pieces of his story. The more I watch Bad Times, the more I appreciate its many layers. All the actors are incredible here. All of them! And yet, Hemsworth probably steals the show for me. We are still not yet appreciating Chris Hemsworth's acting enough. It's nuts, but it's true. He's amazing. Lots of fun sins, like zooming in on the hotel map, questioning the placement of the parking lot phone booth. I'm particularly annoyed in this film with how sound works. The FBI guy can easily hear 50 Shades outside her door in the rain when she is talking quietly, but then later 50 Shades and her sister can't hear people yelling just behind a two-way mirror. This is another excellent example of why having multiple writers works for us. In the movie, dude says, "Father Flynn, alliterative and such." And I wrote a whole thing about how two repeated consonants isn't alliteration, and you have to have three or more, even toss in a Departed reference there. But then a few sins later, I had already written a sin that actually had tons of alliteration in it that referred to the taxidermy and general terminal nature of this hotel. And Dicer left a note suggesting I add, "Now that's alliteration." And I hadn't thought of that on my own, but it tied everything together in a nice little bow. And that is why teamwork matters.
Teamwork makes the dream work. Yeah, this was definitely a fun one to write on. I agree with Jeremy on just how amazing this movie is and how it continues to reveal itself the more I watch it. I am somebody who is prone to loving things just because they have layers and themes and metaphors and like all that. I love that stuff. And this movie is that to the nth degree. In fact, a lot of people complain about this movie because they feel like it's too smart for its own good or whatever, you know, like they're like it thinks it's all that. And I think the movie has a right to think it's all that because I think it is all that. But yeah, there's some really beautiful stuff here.
I don't understand this movie isn't as smart as it thinks it is. I've never understood that as a criticism of anything. I remember hearing that a lot about Scream.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's just, I mean, I think there is, I mean, I'm not saying there's not justification in a movie annoying you in some way, but like a movie being, but I just, I don't know. That's a weird thing to say. I mean, somebody's writing something, they're writing it the way they want to. I don't know. I've never understood that criticism, but that's just me.
Yeah. Danae, I'm assuming you haven't seen it. I'm assuming people can take a drink on that or mark their bingo card, whichever we're going with these days.
I remember when this movie came out and people were just raving about it.
Yes, nope, that one.
Nope, that's a different letter.
I mean, what Aaron was talking about, people were raging about it too. They were mad because it was smarter than them.
It was something where I just remember being like, don't spoil it. Go and watch it. You're not going to know what's happening. It's so fun. What a ride. And this was one that I kind of put into my mind as, a mystery unfolding. And it's delivered in a really obviously interesting way because everybody is talking about it. So it must be interesting enough to hit a general audience because oftentimes, like, you'll hear from certain groups of people, you've got to see this. You've got to see this. But when it's really everywhere is when, you know, it kind of breaks through. And so at least for me, there was a lot of chatter about this one. So I was curious about it. And I was a little bit sad to watch the video because I feel like, okay, I'm getting spoiled here, but I just don't know that I'll ever watch it. And so I have to just continue to let that part of me go where I want to not see things until I'm ready to see them. Cause it's just, guys, I have a job to do. But I did not get to watch this. And so I am still confused. After watching the video, I still don't 100% know what's going on. So maybe I could still enjoy it.
Yeah, possibly. So, yeah.
I mean, we may never see. Don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath.
Let's get into the sins. Jonathan, what was some of the stuff from this one you wanted to point out?
Real quick, because I didn't talk about the movie. I just wanted to say that I lost my train of thought there.
Let me change my intro to that. Jonathan, what are some of your thoughts on the movie?
Well, I just wanted to say that I actually rewatched it because I hadn't seen it since the theater, and I kind of wanted to rewatch it before I watched the video. So I rewatched it yesterday. And
nice.
Yeah, I like it. I don't like it anywhere near as much as you and Jeremy, but I don't know that anyone likes this movie as much as you and Jeremy. yeah, I think it's a fair. Very well done genre exercise. I do feel like I've seen this movie several times in different parts of it. The thing for me about it, though, as much as I like Chris Hemsworth, I think he's good in this movie. That's where the movie starts losing my interest is when he shows up.
Oh, interesting.
I think I just have a lot more fun with it up until that point. I remembered that when I saw it in the theater, and I had the same experience when I watched it yesterday. But it's really funny. When it came out, the other thing I thought was unfair, too, was a lot of people were talking about it felt like a movie that should have come out like right after Pulp Fiction. A lot of people said it was very similar to a lot of Tarantino type movies that, you know, came out after Pulp Fiction, like Things to Do and Never When You're Dead, Killing Zoe, 2 Days in the Valley. I don't really agree with that. I will say, however, it becomes more of a Tarantino type film when Hemsworth shows up. And maybe that's partly why it kind of, I don't have as much fun, but I still like it. Yeah. I mean, it's good. It's very good. I like twisty narratives when they're done well. I like layers building up on layers like Aaron was talking about. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get any deep meanings out of this movie by any means, like Aaron probably did, you know.
Yeah.
He probably learned to love his brother again watching it or something, but I think it's a really fun movie, and I think everyone should watch it that hasn't. Even if you watch the video like Danae, you should still go watch it.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. There is a transitional point that happens when Hemsworth shows up, which, by the way, is so far into the movie.
Absolutely. And I think it's like the last 30 minutes or something.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we even give a joke when they show him, like they show that one scene of him meeting her, you know, in the sand. And it really is, just so you know, Chris Hemsworth is in this movie, I promise. You know, it really is a scene that's like, I promise, we'll get to Chris Hemsworth.
And he's really good. He's very good in the role. It has nothing to do with him. That scene where he's walking up to the hotel in the rain is just hilarious. But it's just really well done. But
what a beautiful human and, Chris Hemsworth is.
And speaking of beautiful, I will sometimes forget her name, Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith's daughter.
Fifty Shades of Grey.
All of a sudden, I just what is her name? God damn it! Good podcasting.
Melanie Griffith comments on Dakota Johnson's
Dakota 50 Johnson.
Nope, this isn't right.
Yeah, it's Dakota Johnson. Yeah,
Dakota Johnson.
Hey, I found this on PeopleMagazine.com.
This was the first time I really saw. This was maybe the first time I'd seen her, because I hadn't seen 50 Shades of Grey, and
Dakota Johnson.
Yeah, and I didn't see that movie with her and Rebel Wilson. So this was, I think, the first time I saw her, and I really like her in this. I think she's great.
Yeah, she's great.
I'm not positive I've seen her in anything else since either, to be honest, but, I dig her in this. So I think everybody's good. John Hamm, Cynthia Erivo is amazing. So it's a good cast. Jeff Bridges.
Yeah. This movie will always be for me, like Cynthia Erivo's, arrival. She blew me away in this movie. So for me, she steals the show, which I think is interesting, because I know Jeremy thinks Hemsworth steals the show. But it's that kind of movie where you can kind of lock in even what Hamm is doing here, because at first I was like, oh boy, Hamm is not great in this.
Then
I realized he was doing a character in the movie that is purposefully put on, and it all clicks in so beautifully. In that way. But I was going to say that arrival of Hemsworth in the movie, to me, is an interesting transition between the twisty storytelling and the, okay, now we're going to, he brings upon the complete metaphor. He lays it out, like what the movie is trying to say thematically and metaphorically, with his speech there. And then the rest of the movie is basically the playing out of what, you know, what morality means to him, to these people, and, you know, kind of where they end up.
And that's how you reconnected with your brother after this movie.
Yes, and that's how I reconnected with my brother after this movie.
Good stuff, man.
Yes.
That's love.
What did you have for some sins, Jonathan, that you enjoyed?
Ron Swanson isn't busting anyone's chops in this image. I think it might even be like the first sin. It's one of the first sins.
Mm-hmm.
I really like, Father Flynn, Jeff Bridges hitting the bell. And as he hit the bell, we added sins, which, I mean, I don't know, maybe we've never done a movie where someone hit a hotel bell, which is weird to think about, because that's a pretty common trope.
Yeah.
But hey, that was hilarious.
I'm glad it worked out. The way he hits the bell, it just popped in my brain how funny it would be if just sins popped up and the narrator didn't know what was going on. Like, and the idea that, like, the reason is because he's dressed as a priest.
Yeah.
And so, like, if any movie, if a priest ever rings a bell, like, it just automatically adds sins to the sin counter.
That makes sense. I didn't even think about the fact that he was a priest, even though go ahead.
Yeah, we say it in the sin, but it's one of those things that just struck me funny, and I was glad Jeremy liked it, and I'm glad that you enjoyed it as well, because it was fun.
And then the other one I had was, they're afraid of sandwiches, but they're willing to eat the pie. I thought that was...
It's true. It's so true. Tomorrow's sandwiches.
I love her in that scene. Like, I'm not feeling eating that sandwich, Lucky. Just love that line.
Yeah. And that's the other thing about Goddard, too, is he is a great, like, I love the writing and the style and the cleverness.
It's interesting. I think he's very clever, and I think he's fun. I really enjoy Cabin in the Woods. I don't like that as much as Jeremy either, which is hilarious, because I'm more of the horror fan for sure. But Jeremy just loves the fuck out of that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Which it's fun. Can get. If you like Goddard that much, I mean, that makes sense. I love, so.
Yeah. Danae, did you have any that you pulled out from Bad Times at the El Royale?
Battle Royale.
I did. But because I know we're going to cover a lot of ground today, I only put like a couple of my most faves, and we've already talked about them. Jeremy brought them up in what he was talking about, and they've already been kind of discussed, but I loved the bell ringing thing. Just, it cracked me up to see the counter go up while he's just dinging away. I thought that was really clever and fun. And then the alliteration sins were great.
The one thing I noticed this time through that I hadn't noticed before was that stupid hot tub in that room or whatever
What was that?
I have no clue. It looks like it's supposed to be a hot tub. It's tiled. There's no drain. There's no faucet. There's no, like, do you have to find hot water somewhere and put it in there? Like, I don't know. I was just kind of like, what is this? Is that a thing? Like, in the old days, did they not run water to the hot tubs? Did they actually fill their own tubs? I don't know. It kind of blew my mind.
Or there's like another way it works. Like there's something inside it that, who knows? Or maybe it gets filled up with water before you get in there. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. And anyways, I was like, well, you know, it's either that or it's the world's most uncomfortable couch.
I have been in a hotel room in Vegas, though, where there was a hot tub like in the middle of the room. It was the weirdest thing. I was like terrified I was going to like wake up and walk to the bathroom and like fall in it. So, but that had like a spout and stuff, so you could start it, you know.
How did he die? Death by hot tub.
That'd be an okay way to go, I guess.
Yeah. I also wanted to mention the interstitial cards, which honestly infuriated me this time through the movie. It's the one part of the movie where I'm just like, there's no rhyme or reason to this stuff. At first you think it's going to go by the hotel rooms. It does that for like three times, and then it's like Washington DC.
Yeah. And then it's just like Billy.
Then it's like whatever. Billy. It's like, what are you doing?
Phone booth.
Yeah. It really infuriated me for some reason. And I loved the, and the cards you wrote in on instead of wrote in on, for that pun. I thought that was fun. And then, I had to mention 50 Shades of the Grey. That is one of those moments you'll have as a sins writer where it's just like, you almost feel like you don't write it. The world just presents it to you. Like it's just right there waiting to be discovered. And, just the fact that he's telling sex stories about wolves and then 50 Shades of the Grey is right there with someone who was in 50 Shades of Grey in the conversation. It's just an amazing thing. All right, let's move on to Dark City.
What the hell is this thing? What is this?
You had never heard of this movie?
No, of course not.
I know you didn't watch it, but you've heard of movies that you haven't seen.
No. I'm so confused. I was like, "What? What is this? Is it because it was popular at one point in time? Is it
really
like a
was
joke?
It really wasn't that popular. It was Alex Proyas directed The Crow, which was a modest hit. And
That's what Chris said too in his notes. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
So yeah, so no, this okay. was a this was a Chris and script. This was Chris and myself. So what?
Oh, you wrote on this one too. So you wrote on two of the three. Yeah. Sin Week. Look at you.
Danae, what did Chris have to say about this one?
He said Dark City has one of the best trailers ever and Aaron should watch it. So what does that mean?
It means that I don't watch trailers.
I still remember Chris talking about that trailer when the movie came out. Like he really likes that trailer. It's just a really good trailer.
What makes it a good trailer?
I haven't seen it in...
That it makes you want to watch a terrible movie?
I haven't seen it in many, many years.
He does say what you said, Jonathan, that this was Alex Proyas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think
follow up to The Crow. And maybe that's part of why I don't know, because The Crow was pretty successful, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He said it's probably his best film.
What, The Crow?
Or Dark City? I'm not entirely sure.
I'm guessing
he probably means Dark City.
He probably means Dark City. I would agree.
He means Dark City.
I would agree with that as well.
Hey, Chris, we know you listen to the show every week, so you can just, you know, let us know next week. We'll clarify that. He said, what I enjoyed sending about this the most is the stranger's plan to switch everybody's memories in some effort to, quote, discover the human soul. They're a dying race, so I guess finding the human soul will help them reproduce now. The dumbest part for me is when they put John's memories into one of their own people, thinking it will help them find him easier. They explain how it works, but it ends up making no sense. In the end, every explanation is, quote, we have a cool concept for our movie and we can explain anything as long as we can get to keep that.
Yep.
And that is the end of that from Mr. Chris.
I got to say, based on what Aaron's already mentioned, I don't know that I've ever been more shocked about a movie that Aaron hated.
you think this
was
right up my alley?
This feels like I mean, maybe it's a little darker than you normally go, but it feels like it is.
No, it's not
straight up your alley. No, I'm just saying in general, darker movies are not typically your bag. That's what that's all I mean.
It's not the dark I don't like. It's the city in Dark City. honestly, it's not really about the darkness for me. I do love a good concept. This movie thinks it has a good concept, but it doesn't do the work to back it up. It leaves you in mystery for about 75% of the movie, which can feel fun if you have a resolution that works or makes sense. I don't think anything about the resolution of this makes sense or works. And they spend so much time in the last quarter of this movie just explaining expositional speech after expositional speech about, you know, what trying to make it all work. And I don't think it ever really does. So I never bought into it.
Had you seen it before?
I'd never seen it before.
Roger Ebert named this the best movie of 1998, if you didn't know.
That's amazing. I
Gene
didn't know
Siskel
he was...
that same year named Babe 2 Pig of the City the best movie. 1998.
Babe 2 is twice the movie this is.
Hard disagree.
No, I had heard that Roger had been wrong about a couple things in his career, but
he does a commentary on the Blu-ray for this. It's really interesting.
You know what? Maybe that would give me some appreciation for it. I honestly would love to hear that, because I certainly know I could have just been in the wrong place for it or whatever, but it just never connected to me in any way that was resolved in a satisfying way for me.
I really, really like this movie. I love the world building. I love the look of everything in this movie. I think it just sucks me in just from a visual storytelling standpoint.
Sure.
Jennifer Connelly is just goddamn. She is just everything in this movie.
She is Jennifer Connelly. Yeah,
and I think Rufus Sewell does a really good job. I really, really enjoy this movie. I don't think
nice.
It's... I never really looked into what it's trying to say, because I just guess I don't care. I do think it answers the mysteries. I don't really get that aspect of what you're talking about. But I don't know. This is my kind of sci-fi. This is like... It's not the same level, but this is like heady sci-fi, right? This is like Arrival or... 2001 or something like that. It's not on that level of those, but I'm saying it's that type of sci-fi. It's just I don't know.
I totally get that. I think I would rephrase your statement as it thinks it's that kind of sci-fi.
No, I think it absolutely is 100%.
Right. I think it'll be one of those things where maybe I just need to watch it again, or here's, you know, like that commentary you're talking about. But for me, the world building that it's doing just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand. We can go into details if you want, but like, I don't understand the ultimate resolution, why it changes anything, or how it's even possible. Like,
I don't know that it matters.
Yeah. And that could be, and that's fine. I totally get that sometimes it's, you know, because you're right. As far as like artistically, visually, those kind of things, I totally get why you dig it.
I love Kiefer because
there's some cool stuff going on. I didn't take that performance either.
Oh, I did. Because he's doing something different. I don't know. He just seems to be like in his own world. I just enjoy it.
Yeah. Danae, what did you think about the movie Dark City?
Well, my only experience is watching the Sense video, but it does tweak this part of my science, my sci-fi mind as I was mm-hmm. watching it. And I do an unnecessary thing, which is to judge old films on how new information or new movies are made. So I'm definitely somebody who suffers from, whoa, this pacing seems pretty brutal or whatever. But then I first of all, haven't watched it. I don't have any experience with it. And it reminds me of like putting Fraggle Rock in front of Iris after she's been watching Chico Bon Bon and expecting her to be like, yeah, this is cool, you know, because it's just such a different right. pace. It's a different way of presenting information. I had her watch an old Mickey Mouse, like from the 20s or 30s, or I don't remember actually what year it was, but it was like this old one about Pluto, and it's just a totally different pace than Mickey Mouse Clubhouse today. And it's interesting to watch her kind of go, wow, this is really slow. We tried to watch Mary Poppins, and in the first, you know, 5 minutes, it's all the credits, and she says, "Mommy, what's wrong with this movie?" So
you're making me sad.
But you know, it just, so it has that feel of I'm watching the Sins video, so I'm already at a disadvantage, but I'm already like, okay, so this just doesn't look as cool as like new sci-fi stuff. So I need to like check myself.
It's really interesting, though, you say that, because you know, I talked about this in the Justice League mini pod, which will be available to the public probably maybe by the time this airs. I don't know. But I was watching that movie and thinking, God, remember when movies didn't look like video games? I really want to go back to that, because
it's different.
I don't like the look of movies today.
There's a pacing difference, especially with the kids' shows, where it was so much more about like making a human connection and
letting
having a
moment
conversation.
Breathe. God, letting them, yeah.
no
fucking moment breathe.
Yeah, there's like nothing. There's no space.
Which is weird, because movies now, I mean, on the average are longer, but they're still not letting those scenes breathe. They think they are. But they're absolutely they're just jamming your eyeballs with shit every 2 seconds, and I don't like it as much for the most part. There are exceptions, obviously. There are still good movies being made. That's not what I mean.
Right. We joke about, you know, being the old people, you know, talking about the kids these days, but this is another example of, you know, the movies that think they're letting things breathe for this generation are, because like my kids would much rather watch 15-second TikTok than a movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, in they are scrolling through 10-second, 15-second, 20-second bursts of endorphins.
Yeah.
And it is, and I say we're all there. We all have our phones, and we all have different ways we activate those endorphins on our phones.
I'm not looking at it right now. Don't judge.
But I do, at risk of being the old guys, like I do want to say there is something really valuable and beautiful about letting a story be told over time in a way that that doesn't have to have something happening every 15 seconds, let alone every 5 minutes. I'm totally with you. I mean, I loved First Cow this year. Can you imagine somebody who is on TikTok brain trying to watch First Cow? Like, it's, you
know.
I'm
just glad stuff like that still gets made.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I wonder how long it will. I wonder the art that this generation will be making 20 years from now.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
What that will look like,
it'll just be a movie of just a white screen, and then like a little blip. It'll be like, are you still paying attention?
The power of storytelling will persevere. I do, but it'll definitely continue
to
evolve.
Well, we've always got the older stuff. I mean, you can always go back and watch whatever you want, especially nowadays. Yeah. And if you actually purchase physical media, but even if you don't, there's still plenty out there. But the one positive, though, when you mentioned First Cow, is that a lot more movies get made today. So still have those movies are still getting made, but finding them isn't always as easy.
It's
especially.
Not as easy.
Especially now, that's becoming a huge problem. That's a thing. There's been a couple of smaller movies that were only available on Epics recently, and a lot of people are like, "How the fuck do I get Epics?" You know. And I think the streaming thing is becoming an issue, and that's going to come to a head in the next 5 or 6 years. I think maybe sooner.
Yeah.
So, start.
My wife and I
aside,
were talking about stuff yesterday like that. We were like, "How do we watch this?" Well, you got to get Paramount Plus. Well, how do I watch this one? Oh, that's on Peacock. You know. Whew.
Yeah,
it's so hard to sit on our butts and watch TV from our own homes.
No, it's just people don't have access to all that stuff.
That's
all
true.
I'm saying.
No, you're right. You're right.
You know, they're not.
I'm being silly.
They're not crazy like me and just buy everything. So
yeah. So the sense that I really enjoyed was Jennifer Connelly doing another Labyrinth. Thought that was clever.
Yes.
Apple denotes asshole in case the green Jell-O doesn't give it away. I cracked up. And the it's all just a big joke, and then the sin being CinemaSins defenders, which of course we appreciate you. So those are the ones I wrote down from Dark City.
What about you, Jonathan?
Business cards with no numbers on them. I thought that was a pretty good observation. Mm-hmm. Good observation. I like the whole nudity is unnecessary but not unwelcomed. Welcome but unnecessary. I'm about 60-40 on it.
I thought that was hilarious too.
The aliens in Dark City have the same weakness as the aliens in Signs was really funny.
We both wrote something on that because it's not like water is alien weakness. It's throughout sci-fi for some reason. I think it's just because our planet has so much of it and it's kind of an easy thing to go to.
But Shyamalan even used it as that was Bruce Willis's
weakness. Sure. Yeah. I wonder if I tried to write this in a sentence and it didn't quite work. So we went a different direction. But It was a sin about that someday the aliens are going to show up and we're going to realize they've been planting this in our movies and television for so long, and that they actually gain power from water. So we'll be screwed.
That'd be awesome. I also enjoyed the part about they said something about building the city, and then was the tune they used rock and roll? Did they arrive in a starship? Well, my amazing mind power didn't work. Maybe this knife will. And the other one was Jennifer Connelly saying, "Would you like to join me?" And then the narrator says, "Duh."
Duh.
you rat bastard. What's his name? Her husband. It's WandaVision. Paul Bettany.
Oh,
Paul Bettany. Yeah, they have a beautiful story, don't they?
I don't even know if they're married. I got to be honest.
They are.
Oh, yeah, they are. Okay.
I never can remember. Oh, yeah, we talked about that, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yes,
we did. They hit it off, and then 9/11 happened, and they're like, nope, we're getting married now.
That is just a ridiculously beautiful couple. Fuck them.
You guys mentioned pretty much everything I had. I liked referencing the riddles at the beginning when the fish was on the floor with the broken glass in the water. Did you also ride in a horse named Friday? I can't believe how quickly I solved this movie. I enjoyed that as well. So, yeah. All right, let's move on to Devil's Advocate.
Yes.
This was a Jonathan-ness script. This was Chris and Jonathan doing this one.
Oh, it was me, Chris. That's right.
I have never seen this movie. I think I've talked about that before, because there was a sin in one of the TV sins, I think, about vanity that I had to read.
Yes.
That's in here.
Yes.
And so I tried to match Al Pacino on that.
Anybody that hadn't seen this movie probably saw like a lot, which we have a sin about it too, but probably heard a lot of former outtakes from other CinemaSins videos.
And it's not because I don't. This movie looks exactly the kind of crazy that I think I might enjoy. I know I've heard enough about it to know that that's probably the case. So I will get around to it at some time. It just hasn't found its way to the top of my list.
This is one of the weirdest movie going experiences I've ever had. And I'm not making fun of any of this. I mean, if you have a really strong religious beliefs or strong spirituality, I can totally see why certain movies would work their way into you in a weird way. But I was dating this girl at the time. She didn't really talk too much about it, but I guess she was more into religion than I realized, but she never like went to church or anything. But I just remember we watched this movie together, and then when we walked out, she just started bawling.
It was like
I felt so bad.
Why?
Just because it just bothered.
It's just like the satanic stuff?
The satanic stuff just really bothered. Which is kind of like, looking back, I mean, I'm kind of like, I personally don't get it, but I mean, I've had emotional reactions to things that other people wouldn't get. So I totally get that. But I felt like the worst person in the world.
Yeah.
I said fast forward and she's a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan.
I've never felt so bad in my life, because I actually enjoyed the movie. So then I felt really,
like, that was rad.
Yeah.
She's like,
yeah. And then I turned around and she's crying, and it was,
oh no.
Yeah. I have had those
as somebody who grew up in a sheltered religious environment. I have had those experiences. One, and I welcome you to laugh at me for this.
No.
It was very, I welcome it, because I understand how strange it can seem from the outside. But I traveled with a group at college, and college was my first experience really kind of being outside of, you know, my home shelter bubble, that kind of thing. And I love the people I traveled with. You know, we were in a singing group, whatever, and we would go to churches and sing and that kind of stuff. And on one of the first trips, one of these guys who I respect very much put in a George Michael CD, okay? George Michael, right? And I just sat there and I looked outside the van window. I invited this. I'm fine with it. I really am fine with it. I sat there and I looked out the window in just like tears. Just started like streaming down my face. I was like, these people I respect. No, you're not. I totally get it. I tell that story to say, yes, it is a very human thing. And you don't know what you don't know. You don't feel what you don't feel. And it can creep up on you sometimes.
You should be very happy you turned out as well as you did, because... No, I'm not even kidding. Like, this is serious. Because like, I went to school. Like, I went to Church of Christ school for 13 years.
Sure, yeah.
But I had my mom is very, you know, open book, and I was not sheltered. And a lot of the kids were, though, like you were talking about. And when they went to college, they just went fucking wild. And you know, bad things happen a lot of the time.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and
yeah.
There's nothing wrong with, you know, I just trying to find a middle ground is probably the best way to go about it.
Well, and
which
and
is
and
what,
we had
which is what we're trying to do with my daughter. So
I'm just like sitting there like, how are these people listening to songs saying I want your sex? I don't understand.
No, like I mean, I read
little me.
I read Stephen King in high school, and I'd be reading it at school, and they'd be like, how do you read that? Like, I mean, I open the book. And
yeah.
I look at the words and I
assimilate the information.
I don't know what to tell you.
And I always try to be very clear when I talk about my sheltered childhood too. Yeah. It really wasn't my parents, which is interesting and probably why I was able to.
I'm sure grow
up the way you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were always open with me. Yeah. We could have conversations about everything, but it was the environment. Everybody in my world was the same, from my perspective, the same as me. And that's a really ingrown kind of thing mm-hmm. you have to figure out. And so,
ingrown. Yeah. Everyone's yeah. thinking
think,
of toenails
think everyone,
now.
Even people not brought up in the church, they have those moments, you know, that they struggle with what they should be feeling. Well, I just thought that was interesting because I just had an interesting story to go along with it. Sorry.
Yeah.
But Devil's Advocate, there's a lot going on in there. I mean, there is a lot of, it's a pretty extreme movie in some ways. It's very Hollywood and it's very much a movie of that time period. Like this had to be in the 90s. Like, I don't know how to explain that, but this felt very 90s in the same way something like Heat feels very 90s.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'll get around to it.
Pacino.
Now that I'm out of my sweet summer child phase,
it's kind of one of those movies. Though I don't even know, my objective and subjective just mesh together. I just love this movie.
Yeah,
I just
have
so much fun with it. Pacino and Reeves just have this really interesting dynamic that I don't think will ever be captured again in any way.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what it is. It's just magic.
Watching the video was definitely made me want to watch it more. Just watching them interact together and just the ridiculousness
I can't even tell. I'll tell you this, I can't even tell, like the older I get, I can't tell if Reeves is the one that's bad or if Pacino is the one that's bad. There's definitely something over, there's a lot of overacting going on.
So you wrote with Chris, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's what he had to say. Devil's Advocate is known most for Al Pacino's speechifying at the end when he says the most blasphemous stuff ever uttered in mainstream film.
Probably
of course, he's playing Satan, so I think the most curious thing about Devil's Advocate are threads that go nowhere. Eddie Barzun is shredding important documents while the firm is being investigated by the Justice Department, but that story has no impact. After the firm gives him a swanky apartment, one of the established lawyers tells Kevin that this is going to make a bunch of people jealous, but the jealousy never materializes. Kevin goes to meet Delroy Lindo, who's being charged with something or another involving killing animals in a restaurant, and instead of giving him advice for the case, Lindo simply asks for the prosecutor's name and does some voodoo that makes the prosecutor unable to speak in court. My favorite thing to Sin may have been argumentative. Mary Ann, Kevin's wife, is looking for him at party and just can't find him for some reason. He's out on the terrace talking to Connie Nielsen for the most part, but Al Pacino tells him to go inside and find two lawyers and tell them to go upstairs to meet in the office, and somehow Mary Ann missed Kevin during his own search of two people at the party. This place is big, but it's not can't find your husband in 15 minutes big. And those are Chris's thoughts on the film.
I agreed with him on that. I remember in the script he asked me about that, like, you know, this might be a little argumentative. I'm like, no, I think you're right, because it kind of bothered me too, but then at the same time you don't want to make fun of the fact that like Charlize Theron's character is freaking out and feels alone, you know, you don't want to make fun of that, but you know, it is bizarre. It's a bizarre scene.
I'll take us into the sins. I liked the glasses of shame in the Echo.
That was awesome, that was great.
Keanu Reeves, Al Pacino in the same movie at last.
Said, and then we take us in off later about the pairing. Uh-huh. It's so funny. Yeah.
And the commenters are raging, like, why are you doing this?
I love after he's like, let's make a baby, and the scene is just makeup baby making. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, fair enough. Her nickname for me is Mr. Incredible. Of course, made me laugh. And then his clothes aren't the devil. That's in made me laugh.
Oh, when he's getting shot.
Yeah,
and actually, like, when
they
he initially
have bullet holes.
Well, yeah, and when he initially gets shot, there is like material puffing up and stuff. So I think they were, but then when they the next shot, he doesn't have any bullet holes. So that's I just went with that.
Yeah. Danae, what about you?
I wrote down the movie expertly tells us what the real evil is. Fast food.
That's such a weird scene.
Did you already talk about Charlize and the boner?
No, nobody's talked about Charlize and the boner yet.
Super liked that one. This line is proof that there's an... Okay, so it's like a really uncomfortable moment where it's just... There's a lot of repeated visual of like intestines and ovaries and whatever was going on. Yeah. Like it was multiple of that. And I'm like, okay. But then it really just made the sensing even more when it's like the proof that there's nothing that Charlize Theron can do that would kill a boner.
That was one of those lines that... They took my ovaries, Kevin. That's just a ridiculous line. Even though the scene's supposed to be like all serious and scary, it's just so ridiculous. So I knew, and that's a pretty famous line, so I knew we had to do something with it, and that's what I came up with.
Yep.
I liked it all, though. I had a good time. I haven't seen the movie, but I liked it. I liked the sense of
And Charlize Theron is so young in this. She's like 22. Like, she's still got like baby cheeks. It's just like, it's like, oh.
Oh, look at you.
I'm sorry, was that it, Danae? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I watched, I felt the same way watching Bridge Over the River Kwai this week and just seeing little Alec Guinness. Just be like, oh, look at you, Obi-Wan.
I almost watched that too this week. It was actually on this weekend, and that is sadly a movie I still haven't ever seen. So
it is so good.
Oh, I'm sure. I bet it'll be one of my all-time faves, but I just, I don't know. It's just, it's long, and I just, you know, haven't had the felt found.
Sure.
The,
no, totally get it.
Yeah,
totally
instead, get I'll it. Just watch Devil's Advocate, like, for the 75th for, time.
Yeah. What were some of your favorites?
Laughing at a pedophile's trial, because that was just insane. Mm-hmm.
Good sin.
Public blowjobbing. We went back. I know I had something on that too, but Chris had something way better. And I did already mention the scene steals 7% of CinemaSins outtakes material.
Right.
And that was the, I have so many names.
Mm-hmm.
Taking it to the Lomax, I thought was really funny. And Al Pacino makes you want to remove sins for Satan. But my favorite by far, and Barrett reviewed the script too and was dying. We were both telling Chris how much we were dying about this, was when he's basically trying to get Keanu to sleep with his half-sister so they can give birth to the Antichrist. And he said, I can't remember if it's Pacino or the woman, but they say, in 2 minutes, you'll forget about all this. And then the sin is just 2 minutes. Which is just amazing.
Yeah. Good stuff. That's the movies for Sin Week. Again, if you want to check those out, you can be a Sin Club member at patreon.com/cinemasins.
And yes, we've already been talking for an hour about three videos.
Yes, that is how it goes around here.
Hey, podcast peeps, it's me again. Those are my dogs. Those are my... every time I talk, is this how Aaron feels when we're okay? We're gonna try this. I just wanted to tell you about the survey again, which is at cinemasins.com/BTS. So. Go fill it out.
All right, let's move into the week's videos. We'll start with Commercial Sins, Eminem, Sexy, and I Know It. These Eminem's commercials, I just don't understand how they're legal. They are so ridiculous.
I kind of forgot they existed at the time. I mean, I thought they were funny. I did, but I mean, it wasn't like, oh, these are hilarious, but I don't know. They didn't bother me.
I get where the humor comes. Yeah. The humor comes from the fact that they are so over the top. I mean, they're either about cannibalism or whatever you would call sexual attraction to candy. I don't know if that has a technical term. But
given
all
the
about
Eminem's
that.
Like character was a weird choice. It's kind of up there with like California Raisins. Like don't you want us to eat these? Because now we don't want to eat them.
Yeah. And then it's like, you know, if the M&M says eat me, what do they mean? Do they mean cannibalism or do they mean sex? Like, I just did these commercials.
And then you have a commercial like this that doesn't help at all.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's so weird.
Chris wrote this script and he said, this ad was incredibly obnoxious to me back when it played, complete with that LMFAO song, Sexy and I Know It. Random dude at a party thinks that Miss Brown, the brown M&M, is naked because her shell looks like what most M&M's chocolate center looks like. But the idea that nobody has ever seen a brown M&M is absurd, almost as absurd as me writing an Angry Sin script about it. It's even more absurd that another M&M thinks she's naked. And does no one see the M on her shell? Does no one see it? Anyway, dumb M&M sheds his shell and starts dancing to LMFAO. And I had questions about a shell that acts as clothing that has to fit an M&M's eyelids. I laughed really hard. Chris's scripts, just side note, crack me up. I mean, Jeremy's are just okay.
I knew you were going to have to diffuse that somehow, because I'm seriously going to think everybody's scripts cracked me up.
They're all really, really funny. But when it got to the eyelid part, I was like, oh my God. Okay, anyway. It's also another one of those worlds created that make you wonder about the character's sex lives. Like Miss Brown talks about the prime minister hitting on her or something, and you can't help but think about people having sex with M&Ms. I guess if M&Ms can talk and go to parties in this world, why not?
Yeah. And
those are Chris's thoughts on the M&M commercial.
Yeah.
I love
M&Ms, though. If I'm not having disturbing thoughts about their humanity or sexuality, I do enjoy eating them.
I laughed so hard at the sin. Was like, it's like just trying to contemplate, like you want to give pleasure, but not too much that you'll melt. It's just me.
That was the only one he didn't mention that I had written down was, yeah, the...
Oh, my God.
Kana M&M Lingus.
Yeah, Kana M&M Lingus.
Yeah. So great. Good.
I had You Can't Take Mrs. Brown Anywhere Without Her Talking About the Goddamn Prime Minister.
Yeah, that was funny, too.
It was good. That's funny. Very nicely done. Let's move into TV sins. Rick and Morty. We're back on our Rick and Morty kick.
Raising
Gazorpazorp. Yes, this was an Aaronthin script. Jonathan and myself writing on this one. Still not old to me. Don't care if it's old to you.
I love it. No, it's funny because people will write to me and say, like, they'll merge our names. It's a thing now, Aaron. Mm-hmm. You've made a
good
thing.
Good, good. Anyhow, this was Jonathan and I writing on this one. Any further thoughts on Rick and Morty or this episode before we get into the sins?
This is a funny episode. I don't know that it's necessarily one of my favorites, but it's, you know, it's right there in that middle tier probably.
I like that it's not trying to do as much as a lot of episodes do. It's almost more sitcom-y than a lot of the episodes are, because it is really just kind of A plot, B plot. You know,
and you get Rick and Summer on an adventure.
Right. Yeah.
Wait, did I say that? It's Summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For some reason, I get her and the Phineas and Ferb sister mixed up sometimes.
Candace.
Yeah. Because I called Candace Summer in a script that I caught before I sent it on.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I think that there's something about season one of Rick and Morty. I didn't really watch season two as intensely I haven't kept up with it. But there was something about season one of that new show that's doing new things, that's, you know, pushing boundaries and has a totally different level of humor. And so I remember watching these episodes differently than ones that we might like pull up for season two or season three, where I'm like, oh, they're expanding this universe and they're going on more adventures. But this one to me is one that I was like, wow, they're going there.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's a lot. Like, Summer almost gets raped in this. And, I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on. Not that that's beyond crazy. But you know what I mean? There's a lot of dark stuff in this episode.
Sure, sure.
I think the thing that I just remember connecting to this realization every episode of Rick and Morty that I did not know where they were going to take it every single time. So starting off with this, like, you've got a little kid upstairs having sex with a sex doll while everyone's having breakfast, and you're thinking, well, that's awkward. And then there's a child. Okay, that's also awkward. And, you know, so it's just they keep figuring out how to make it more and more awkward and intense and strange. So, but there's nothing that's, but, there's just nothing quite like season one because it was the first time it was done.
Yeah, this is a show that, that makes things very awkward, but knows how to, it knows how to do that line, right? Better than I think something like The Office, for instance, does, because The Office to me is just hard to watch because it's so uncomfortable. Rick and Morty is uncomfortable, but it also finds a way to pull you back in. Like, you know, you've got the stuff with Morty and raising the Gazorpazorp, and then that gets kind of serious and dark. But then you've got the dad, you got Jerry and the mom, you know, like off to the side making cracks about him trying to raise a kid and stuff. I don't know. It just, it works. It works. Or like,
for some reason it works.
The weird stuff with like, you know, the horrible stuff that those aliens that are trying to attack Summer. And then, you know, Rick makes that comment about, you know, we wouldn't be in this if it wasn't for you and your boobs. You know, it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's funny.
It is funny. It knows how to press on stuff in a way that you're like uncomfortable with, but then you're also somehow appreciating, which is strange.
And I don't know that it'll ever be dated. I mean, it probably will, because I guess everything is to a point, you know, but I think it's one of those shows that'll play pretty well for a long time.
We had that interesting conversation. The show makes it difficult sometimes to do what we do too, because we had that interesting conversation about the boob comment. You know, like him, like Rick is the character that would insinuate that, but it is still something to comment on as being a sin. And I think even in the sin, we ended up landing on admitting, like, we don't even know if the show is actually aware that it's victim shaming and making a joke of that.
Like that a lot.
And so we gave ourselves the space to go, we get that the show may be doing this on purpose and actually understands that it's doing this, but we still have to sin it, you know, because of how, because there are idiots out there who really do believe that. And, you know, we'll take that as an excuse to laugh at that in that way. So, it makes it difficult sometimes to kind of figure your way around that stuff. But it was really fun to sin. Danae, I think you get to start out the... The sins on this one.
In the interest of moving things along, not because I wasn't prepared. I did prepare for this part. I just wrote down one. Rick survives this fart. I died laughing, and then I was resurrected and came back. So that's how I'm here today. But there was just something about like letting it play in its length and entirety, and I just did not know it was coming. And so for the sin to be he survives this was just unexpected and genuinely hilarious.
Like that's the ridiculous part. Like they're in another dimension with like these creatures with like arms coming out of their heads and stuff. And but the fart is the unbelievable part of that.
That's the unbelievable
part. And
it's just
the interesting part of our job where the first edit comes in and we have to comment, no, can you please let the entire fart play?
Yeah, I had to write that because they just had like a really short amount. And I was like, well, of course he would survive that.
He'd survive that fart. You got to play the whole thing.
It's like, I'm really sorry, but can you please play more of the fart?
So that
or
is
we
our
have
job.
To cut the sin. Either one.
Yeah,
must
there
have
is something,
more fart.
And then after they did it, I had to kind of write, good job. Like, perfect.
Well, perfect. That is the perfect length of uncomfortable fart. There is something about our job. It's not just writing. We do have to think about how it's delivered too. And there genuinely is, and there's so many layers to what we're presenting to you guys before, you know, it ever gets to YouTube where, yeah, it could be funny, but if you don't visually see what we're talking about in the edit, or it just doesn't make sense once you see the edit, it still goes through another round of potentially being cut or massaged or changed or something because it has to make sense. So it was just absolutely perfect. Great job.
Jonathan, why don't you go next?
Remembering your late grandfather every time you use your sex robot.
It's true.
Pretending Delaware is larger exists. Was that a knock on Frank?
Sure, of course.
Okay. I love this.
Was it really? Yeah.
I've done that before, too.
We've done that before with other states, too. But, you know, it's just, you know, I love the idea love that you, the Frank. Narrator is so poor at U.S. geography that literally thinks that Delaware isn't a place, you know?
And
it's the narrator. It's not the writers just giving it to Frank.
I also enjoyed Good News Parents. What you do doesn't make a difference. that felt way too real.
Yeah, it did.
And I think his murder boner would be accompanied by a, well, boner boner.
Well.
Because it's true. Those creatures are so horny. They drop sex robots on them. And 2 minutes later, they're all impregnated. Yeah. The only other things I had down were the pronunciation of Ralph Fiennes and then being able to repronounce it in the next line was fun. And then could be worse. He could be showing him Caillou. Also thought that was,
I love that one.
That was great.
There's nothing worse than Caillou, by the way.
Nothing. Not
nothing
a thing.
Worse than Caillou.
All right, let's move on to, well, more Rick and Morty, kind of. We're moving on to Solar Opposites, the Matter Transfer Array, which, of course, is Justin Roiland's new show on Hulu in the second season has just dropped. I have watched the entirety of the second season already. I love this show. I think it is, in many ways, I like it better than Rick and Morty. And I don't know, maybe it's just because it's newer, but there's something really fresh about it that that I enjoy. So.
I completely disagree.
No,
it is not fresh.
You're not alone. You are not alone.
I mean, it is, it's like, hey, this worked. Let's do it again with aliens.
Well,
on,
let me explain fresh. I mean, new characters. Like, it's not just Rick and Morty and their family. Like, there's, you know, new people to figure out and characters to do stuff. And
I've only seen the pilot. The only thing about it that seems similar to me was that just, you know, the guy who does Rick just doesn't sound that different doing.
Yeah.
No.
What's his name? But laughed a lot at the pilot, a lot. But I haven't watched any more episodes.
So bored.
And the only thing about it that I thought was kind of obvious was like they clearly, because they weren't on a network, so the cursing feels a little forced to me just because it's kind of like, oh, we can say fuck now. So let's just say fuck a bunch.
Well, what's interesting is I guess I've only watched the unbeeped Rick and Morty's because that's not different from Rick and Morty for me. Like I hear swearing in Rick and Morty all the time.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong then.
No. I just didn't think of it that way. But it is bleeped usually when it's on TV.
But I guess it's not in the cuts we watch, so maybe I'm not thinking about that. Either way, it felt a little more like, I don't know, whatever. I laughed a lot. I really liked it. So
I'm looking forward
to watching the rest of it.
It's great.
I just want to let you guys know I care about you as people, but I'm disappointed in you.
Well, a lot of people like it. I mean, they got a second season, so
I'm disappointed in everyone who likes it.
What is it that you didn't really. Was it just that it felt like
it was really boring to me. It wasn't new or interesting.
Yeah, I definitely didn't think it was boring.
It was like it was like Rick and Morty and Third Rock from the Sun.
Yes.
With a little bit of cursing.
Yes.
And it didn't even feel consistent in how it built its own world, specifically like the sins that we point out, like when they're like, where, what's a brain? And then they're talking about brains and we're not like, let's kill her. We weren't going to kill her. You know, just it's like, what are you guys trying to do here?
I especially like the school, though. I love the principal. And I guess that's a teacher. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I just love how she was always calling the kids like fuckheads and stuff.
I didn't like that either. But mostly because anything set in high school, I'm immediately like, I just don't want to be here.
But it's a cartoon and it's aliens.
I know, but it doesn't. I just don't know what this is doing that is so fun and unique and new.
I laughed a lot.
That people are like, oh, I need this show in my life. I guess I'm just missing something.
It's just funny.
You just didn't
it's
like
just
it.
Really, really funny. I laugh a lot, and I do think it's fresh. I do know that it is very similar in its sense of humor, and yes, the voice acting for the one character, but it's a totally different family dynamic. It's much more fish out of water than Rick and Morty is, and I think that stuff can be really fun.
The voice acting is not a big deal. I would get used to that. It's like H. John Benjamin. Every time I see him in something else, I just immediately think of Archer, but I get used to it, you know.
I also think that what locked me into this show is how consistent it wants to be with its world, which is very similar to Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty does this as well. But there is, you briefly see at the end of this episode, and we take a sin off. I think it's our first ever sin off that's a that'll never happen sin, but it's a sin off. Because that wall that they're building becomes intricate to the plot of the show in some crazy cool ways. Like, they do some really cool stuff with the shrinking of the humans and the wall. That continues in season two as well. And that locked me into the show. I was just like, oh, that's really smart and interesting. It's like they created a show within a show, but it all still works. There's an episode called, I think it's called The Bear Attack, or A Bear Attack Such and Such or whatever. And it all takes place inside this wall, but you see a bear attacking the family outside the wall just a couple times briefly. And so the show title is about what's happening to the main family, even though we don't really know anything about it and everything is going on inside the wall. I just find that stuff just like it's catnip to me. I really enjoy it. So I don't know if that explains it more for you, Danae, but it definitely is.
It doesn't help me at all. I don't know. Unfortunately,
I like the pilot, and that didn't help me. So
okay, fair enough. You'll have to watch it to understand.
I think I understand the premise. They've crash landed on Earth. They can't get off. They need to go to an uninhabited planet to repopulate an uninhabited planet once their little creature turns into a full size creature. Mm-hmm. They both do not like the humans around them and also are fascinated by the humans around them. And they're trying to blend in while also clearly not blending in. So it's just like, okay, pick a lane. What are we doing? You know, like, blah, blah,
blah, blah. I mean, you just explained Resident Alien as well. I mean, it's like almost the exact same show, except one's, you know, animated, ridiculous, over the topness.
If I could like release my sin brain, maybe I would have enjoyed it. But I found this to be an incredibly sinful show from the very beginning. To me, real reasons too. Like, he built this incredible machine that just can go to the center of Earth, but he can't repair his spaceship.
I mean, now stuff you're just like talking that. About cartoons, though. I mean, like, you know, it's yes.
I only have so much time to enjoy what I watch. Right, I'm not totally. Going to enjoy this. And here's the reasons why I'm not going to enjoy this. Because there's right. Rick and Morty. If I want to see something like that, I already have that show. I already have this humor. I already have this. Yeah. It's just shaken up.
It's much just shaken more realistic up and like, that Rick can go from dimension to dimension.
Thank you. You understand what I'm saying.
You get it, Jonathan. You get it. Let's talk about the sins themselves, and Jonathan, you get to start this one off because this is a Daenerys.
The getting excited about a Dick Wolf shirt thing was funny because I wasn't positive who wrote it, and I was curious if either one of you knew who Dick Wolf was, and so I thought maybe you just thought it was funny that a shirt said Dick Wolf. I just wanted Dick to Wolf, make sure.
No,
I just wanted to make sure that no. wasn't the case. I wasn't Wolf trying to Dick. Be condescending. It read weird to me. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, that was exactly. It was about the actual Dick Wolf and mm-hmm. His Law and Order and Chicago shows and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you mean that's racist, R-A-Y.
Yeah.
Which it's right there. Looks like that was a pretty popular one in the comments.
I couldn't believe the show didn't make that joke.
I know, no kidding.
It's right there.
And just like that, Corvo was added to the TV Sense writing team. No questions asked. I thought it was very...
When he was talking about the sexual exploits of the TV characters, I was like, hey, welcome to the team. That's what we do.
So that's what I had.
Yeah.
Good stuff. It was very funny.
Danae, what did you want
to
talk about?
No, your turn. You go ahead.
I had to mention the Naruto headband. That really was an experience for me where the kid's walking down the hallway and has that headband on. And I was just like, I know this headband. And then I just had all these flashbacks of that impertinent little child in that lonely swing. And I was like, oh my goodness, you made us watch that show. You fans made us watch Naruto. So I enjoyed doing that one. And then had to get the super precious about the E in your name sin in there for Danae. Just a little pokey poke.
Yeah, when I saw our Combine script and I read that sin for the first time, I believe I commented and I was like, you motherfucker.
I think you said something like that for sure.
Now I hate this show more.
People are going to think I did this and I didn't do it.
I think people are aware that parents name you.
That's true.
Right, that's true.
I hope.
I mean, Danae kind of named herself.
I did name myself in a way. You're right.
Oh, you did name yourself?
She picked that name.
God. Well, mm-hmm. You know, she could be like River Phoenix. I mean, or Joaquin. Although Joaquin mm-hmm. was Leaf for the longest time. I don't know when he changed to Joaquin. Yeah. The parents let them name themselves when they were like, I don't know, 7 or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fun. That's fun. I should clarify. It is Danae's middle name is Danae. And so that's where that comes
Her first from. Name is Harold.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Correct. It's Yumulak, actually.
It's Corvo.
Danae, what did you have?
I liked sending the Corvo attaching the stationary panel to his wheel because that really annoyed me. And it was in the first like 3 seconds. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh no. and then people looking at your toast sprouts. Put an Afghan on if you don't people look at your toast sprouts. Just call them toast sprouts is really delicious. Like it just sometimes you put words together and you're like, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, you can't complain about something that you have an easy solution to. That is a rule, and that will be a sin.
It's a rule.
All right, let's move into cinema sins. Legend of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole. This is a, I believe this was a Barret sin?
It's a Barret.
It's a Barret. Barret and Danae writing on this one.
Nice.
Barret did not give his comments on this one, so I guess I'll just jump right in.
Yeah, how did you feel about this one?
I wanted to enjoy myself, but I was sinning it. So I had this kind of like brain struggle going on. But okay. I think had I watched this, you know, maybe when I was younger, I would have been really excited about it because it's like a animal adventure with fantasy and, you know, all this stuff. But I was really disappointed.
Yeah, it's like a, kind of like a Secret of Nem thing, right? Something like that.
It had that vibe in a way. And I think animals, you know, coming to life and, you know, being human-esque is just something that you're always going to be interested in when you're growing up. And there's just really fun stories. There's so many great books. And Guardians of Ga'Hoole is one of this book series. But when I started to pick at the seams of what they were trying to tell us, I just found that I don't know. It kind of felt like if they hadn't done Lord of the Rings right, it would have been beautiful but disappointing. And this kind of felt like that. Mm-hmm. And then I went and did research and discovered that this was that. So
beautiful,
when it came
but disappointing,
out,
yeah.
It was beautifully disappointing. Was this especially for the fans?
Was this the Snyder Cut?
Yes, this was the Owls of Ga'Hoole Snyder Cut. Yeah.
I also could not get the titling right. I was writing down Guardians of the Legions of the Legends of the Owls of the Ga'Hoole people and just kept adding more and more to it. So anytime I referenced it back and forth with Barret, I just made it more and more complicated.
Battle at the Owls of Ga'Hoole.
You know, this kind of behind the scenes, but as Chris was talking about, he was getting this, like, I think we all, like, this came out close to when Rise of the Guardians came out, right? Which is a completely different movie. It's
totally different. Yeah.
Very, very different. But it's like, but they're just similar enough with, you know, Guardians in there. And it was just like, you know, I think, I don't remember if he got the wrong movie at first or if he wrote the, I don't remember how it worked out, but there was some confusion there between the two.
Oh yeah. I was confused. I thought I was doing something completely different. So when I got the assignment and then I got my disc, I was like, oh, what is this now? Because I thought that I was going to be doing Guardians of the Galaxy or something, which I think we already did.
Yes. Yeah, oh, definitely.
I forgot about that. Yeah, because Danae sent a schedule out or something. And one of the things was Guardians of the Galaxy. And I was like, wait, I think we already did that. Like,
yeah. And I was like, wait, no, I'm doing it. And then I realized, it's about owls.
Legend of the Guardians of the Galaxy quest is what we did this
Ga'Hoole
week.
Of the Ga'Hoole people. Yeah. Of the Ga'Hoole owls. I think... again, I think it's interesting to build a world where you have, you know, good and you have bad and you have these factions and but they just so briefly touched on everything all at once instead of building a universe and setting up for, and I know sometimes it sucks to set up for another movie, but they certainly could have done something
interesting
in a different way where they didn't have to do a very little of so much. Because I did a lot of research on this one to kind of figure out what they were pulling from. And so that's one thought. And then the other is, once I did the research and realized that there was so much and it's pretty dark, maybe it was good that they didn't, but then they should have pared back quite a bit and maybe just had answered some questions earlier on. But it was beautiful and confusing. Like, why, you know, why do we have fire? Why are there fire? Why would you go into a fire to pick up fire? I spent like 45 minutes researching. They have all these like little owl factions, and one of them are these really specialized owls who can fly into forest fires through like swirls of air and pick up embers to take back and use for blacksmithing. But you already have fires that are lit everywhere around. So why not just use, it's just, there's a lot, I've got a lot of questions and it's not going to be answered in this movie. It's probably going to be more in the books, and they probably didn't do a great job of representing the world that was created in book material.
Yeah. It sounds like you'd love the books. It sounds like the books
I probably would enjoy the books.
Right up your alley.
Yeah.
This movie reminds me very, very much of The Golden Compass, in that it is about this deep literary world. I haven't read either of the book series, of course, but it's about, you know, this deep literary world. And the movie is trying to do two things. It's trying to hook you into the world and also set up a universe to, you know, build sequels, you know, off of and that kind of stuff. And I don't know that either movie accomplishes it very well. I like this movie better, at least I think I do. I haven't seen it since it came out. Then I like The Golden Compass. But both of them are also really beautiful, gorgeous visuals. Mm-hmm. I think I was so overwhelmed by the visuals of this movie. Some of that flying in the rain stuff is just mind-blowing.
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
I think I was so overwhelmed.
It's a lot of owls flying
in the rain.
So much.
Exactly.
Flying in the rain.
It's probably why I loved it. But I think I love the visual so much that I probably gave this movie more credit than it probably deserves. If I watched it again, I don't know that I would like it as much.
Yeah.
But I remember coming out of it really enjoying what I had seen. And I think I'm going to leave it there. I don't think I'll ever revisit it. I think I'm just going to leave those good thoughts in my brain that I had a good time and thought the world was fun and really enjoyed the visuals. But
I think it's...
I'm almost sure if I watched it again that I probably wouldn't like it.
I think it's weird that Danae brought up that it probably could have done a better job of establishing the characters before just jumping in, because, you know, Zach usually does that. He's really good about not just throwing us in the middle of a bunch of people that we've never met,
right.
We've never seen a movie about before.
He really does have a type, doesn't he? He really does make a certain kind of movie. It's incredible. So, yeah,
I will say I've never seen this, at least all the way through. I was gonna watch it yesterday before I watched the video. It's on HBO Max if anybody wants to watch it. I got about 30 minutes in and I was just like, I'm not feeling this.
I'm good.
It's a lot of owls
like,
flying.
I'm just not, this, it just wasn't, and I didn't like it starts off with them getting captured and like enslaved, and I'm like, I don't want to watch this. Like, this is not where I want my head space to be. So I watched Bad Times at the El Royale instead, because that's so much more, you know, good natured.
There you go.
But it is a better movie from what I can tell, but I can't give an honest opinion on this movie. I just didn't care for the first 30 minutes. That's all I can tell you.
Sure.
If you take out all of the flying, owls flying and owls fighting, it's about a 10-minute long movie.
I didn't know a whole lot about what was going on. And maybe that's partly what you're talking about. Like, they just start saying things like in the first scene. And I'm like,
what
are you talking about?
They like, literally just are like, we're going to assume that every made up word you already know, which honestly, sometimes I can appreciate. But there is an element of why Pixar or Disney will do what they do, or even, you know, other where they're going to tell you some lore and then they're going to show you a couple maps, you know, and then they kind of bring some stuff back around later and they just sort of like sprinkle in the.
Yeah, it's like if you were learning a foreign language and the first class you took was Spanish 3. Like, that's
it,
what
it
this
like
movie
that.
Felt like jumping into.
Raya and the Last Dragon?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So. That even in that one, I felt like they kind of pushed a little bit too much on the acceleration of
world building
a little bit too much, front loaded at the end. And then because it was a lot to process. And so you're waiting for a story to begin. Whereas this one, you know, very much does the same thing. But everything is it's like an entire conversation of just literally just made up words. So.
Well, that's a good place to transition into the sins, and I'll start us
like,
off.
You have to know the types of owls. Like, if you don't know the types of owls, like totally screwed.
It's a lot.
It's crazy.
It was a lot.
Because I really enjoyed the word arbidarb in the hilarious words in it. I was just like, that's such a perfect sin for this movie. I love the observation of who painted the ends of the horns. Like, anytime there was an observation about, like, how are these owls doing some of these things we're seeing on screen? Always knew they were addicted to Tootsie Pops as far as what owls were. That just made me laugh.
One of my all-time favorite commercials, by the way.
Yes. One, two,
so good.
Three. Overhead image of a tongue in a vulva, and you will not convince me otherwise. First of all, I guess thank you.
Yeah, I could. Like, I will never be able to see anything seen else.
That, and now I will never see anything else if I ever see that scene again.
That's the main reason Aaron's not rewatching the movie.
That's true. That's 100% true.
I just, when I wrote that one, I was like, this one's going to make Barrett proud.
Yes. Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, because it's true.
Because it's true.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. Not that I would know. Only in this game, the snitches actually get stitches. What a great play on words. Love that. And then I really love the poem. I had to mention the poem as well. And especially the fact that the last word is murdered, even though it should be killed. That kind of stuff always makes me smile.
Yeah, for sure.
Makes me laugh. Saying Gahool like Yahoo. Gahool. I really liked that. And then... your dad is standing in the magical owl land. He knows it's real.
Yeah, that was hilarious. <It's just> like,
so good. So good. Jonathan, what about you?
You said a few, but I did enjoy why does an owl need fucking oil lamps? I thought it was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it have been easier to say you're an asshole? I thought that was great. And mouse murder. No wonder Disney passed on this franchise.
Yeah.
Yep. I did a lot of research on this one, and I have a comment too. So I'm going to, since we're trying to like not do a full on, I thought maybe I could pick some that wink and nod to ones I did research on. And
sure, you can do whatever you want. We'll quickly go through keeping tabs in the comment section. We've got time to do what we want to do.
I think I can do it all at once, but the snake in the owl nest, I actually learned that in the comment section, from Javandi, who says that snakes in owl nests are actually a thing. Some owls catch blind snakes, which are small insect-eating snakes, by the way, and put them in their nest to eat insects and parasites off of their fledgling owls. Hello, I wrote that in. My bad. No. I did research, but apparently did not find this information. So, but thankfully there's other people that were in there like also not realizing that that was the case. I just assumed wrongly and from my research that yes, snakes eat things out of nests on the regular. I looked up nurse snakes or something. I didn't look up blind snakes, so maybe that's why I missed it, but that was a shocker to me, and I love the comment section for that reason.
Nice.
The sin about, I was just thinking that the only thing missing from this opening sequence was an extended shot of an owl vomiting. I got to learn about pellets.
Mm-hmm.
So.
The owl's version of the hairball.
I mean, wow. Owls are kind of freaky.
Kind
legit.
Of? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're a little,
they can turn their head all the way around. They're demonic.
They're
the exorcist.
They're special.
I saw The Exorcist. I know what demonic is.
I mean, I don't think they can actually turn it around. But anyway, then the sin about never seeing the light of dawn, considering most owls are nocturnal and don't enjoy the light of dawn. I'm not sure how this is a threat. I got to do some additional research and figure out interesting facts about owls, and also that there are some that are day owls. Not all owls are night owls. They're famous for being nocturnal, but some are not. Some are actually the daytime hunter variety. So I got to learn that. Regarding their necks, they have 14 neck vertebrae, which is twice as many as humans. And like the barred owl can turn their neck 270 degrees.
Ooh, wow. I knew they could do 180. I didn't realize they could go 270. That's insane.
Yeah.
They are demonic.
Aaron would be a day owl, right, though? Because he'd be like 11 o'clock. He'd be like, nope.
Yeah. They can pull this feat because their vertebrae have holes that are about 10 times the size of the animal's blood-carrying arteries. So with so much wiggle room in between, the arteries can pass through the holes and still have it turn, which is how they have the ability to do that. I also learned an interesting fact about an owl being that the largest one is extinct. Do you want to guess how tall it was? The largest owl?
A now extinct owl?
8 feet. It was called...
Oh my God. I was going to go with 4 feet, but oh, sure, 8 feet. 8 feet just freaked me out.
Oh no, now I'm seeing the bunny walk in my room again. Oh God.
I don't know.
And
yeah,
now
like
he's accompanied
feet.
By an 8-foot owl.
Like 4 feet.
Yeah. Yep.
That's like as tall as my daughter.
Almost 4 foot tall.
Yeah. That would
an
be
owl.
My guess.
God. Anyhow, I learned a lot on livescience.com about random owl facts, which was super fun. I also did some research on how many birds fly above the clouds since the opening sequence has them above the clouds. I thought that's pretty high up. How many birds actually fly up? Not very, very many. And then there's also something I read about airplanes. And I stopped doing research after that because it's pretty tragic. But owls don't usually go up that high.
But it looks pretty.
Another one that I really enjoyed putting together was the owl skeleton sin.
Mm-hmm.
Because I actually went on to multiple websites to do research of anatomy. And I am convinced beyond belief that whatever animator decided to animate that was really tripping because I wanted to go even more in and like show side by side and show joints and show all this stuff, but it ultimately the pacing would have been really wrong. And so we landed with what we have, and I'm excited about that. But I wish you guys could see how many different skeletons. There's just the views, being able to turn it around, whatever they put together was just a monstrosity. But owls have really interesting skeletal systems.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. If we were doing keeping tabs, mine probably would have been in the research I did on human anatomy via arms because of the people with the arms
on
their head.
Yes, I love those sins, by the way. Yeah.
And just the idea of how many muscles it takes to, you know, have arms, and then just, you know, relating to that, the fact that there would need to be chest muscles as well. And if you have chest, then you probably have mammary glands there on the females. So they should have boob cheeks if they have head arms. That should be a thing.
As good as places I need to transition to the next one.
All right, let's go into Galaxy Quest. This was a Johnamy script. This was Jonathan and Jeremy on this one. One of my favorite movies of all time. This is so much fun. What did Jeremy have to say about the Quest of the Galaxies?
He said, we wrote the Galaxy Quest sins ages ago, but looking back through the script, I remember being baffled at Guy showing up the day after the convention at the electronics store opening. There is literally no good reason for him to be there, but he is, and therefore he ends up on the entire adventure. I didn't write it, but I loved the sin that takes the idea of them watching all Earth shows and veers wildly into a WKRP in Cincinnati reference.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
There are also a lot of questions I have about how the Thermians built a ship with transporters that are based on human anatomy without them having any idea about human anatomy. My favorite sin that I wrote was this one. You're starting to act like you did in episode 17. You seen stealing hack. Alexander actually gets this reference, and it's amazing that all the actors remember every single detail from every episode back in the early 80s. I can't even remember if we send the Thomas Crown Affair, but you do, super memory actors. And mostly obvious comparison of the film to Bug's Life and Three Amigos.
Yeah, that was what I had never thought about till he said that. I'm like, oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then this definitely. Movie's great. I don't know. Like, being a huge Star Trek fan, I don't know how you could be like a Star Trek fan and not just love the hell out of this movie, because it's definitely making fun of some aspects of it, but there's a lot of love there too. I don't know. This
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You can feel how much it honors the silliness of our fandom.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, for sure. And there's so many things about it you wouldn't even think. Like, casting Tim Allen was perfect. Whatever you think of Tim Allen, but I think at that time him being like, I mean, he was that type of actor, basically. I don't know. It's just, it's perfect casting. I don't really know how to get into all that, but it's perfect casting, and he does a great job. And just that Sigourney Weaver and Alan Rickman, it is
even in
really good
in Enrico Colantoni.
Yes,
right. Is that his name? He was on Just Shoot Me too, right?
Yeah. Veronica Mars. Yeah.
And Veronica Mars. Yeah. Yeah, I really like him.
Yeah, no, he's great.
And just the way he talks in this, just it's just so perfect.
Yeah, the old DVD, I don't know if the Blu-ray had this, but I remember the first release of this on DVD, you could actually watch the movie in that language. I don't know why you'd want to, but that was an option.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, I absolutely love this movie as well. Already mentioned, it's one of my favorites of all time. I think it is so pitch perfect in its tone. throughout the movie, and it just makes me laugh. And it, again, is such a beautiful mockery of fandom.
And it's clearly
fandom,
very hard, it's
and
very
a loving
hard
one
to
as
do
well.
This kind of movie well. So I don't know. It's just it's crazy. Yeah. It didn't spawn more like sequels and stuff. But I guess it just wasn't the hit they wanted it to be. So
yeah, you don't know. Is there air? You don't know. Danae, what's your experience with Galaxy Quest?
I have none.
All right, take a drink.
This is one I actually would have thought you had seen.
I wondered, you know, it's old and it would have hit you, I think. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay, age giver.
Hey, your husband did that on Twitter the other day, by the way.
I am ageless.
That's true. I would have thought this one would have kind of hit your sweet spot.
Hey, I just want to really quickly touch on something that I want to make sure everybody understands and comes to appreciate, I hope. I don't like movies.
But we will mention movies and you will go off on how much you love them. So like, it's not, I mean,
I don't,
it's not.
But I'm not, I didn't then. I don't like now. I've never been someone who's been like, oh shit, a new movie.
No,
let's go. I've always been like can we play video games and stay on the couch? Also, can someone who's coming here please stop at a drive-thru and bring me tater tots and tea? That's me. That's me.
No, I know, but I just, you know, I just guess sometimes if you've seen it or not. This would have been one I would
have guessed.
Yes.
No,
I will
shame.
Say this also came out around the same time as Toy Story 2, which I think was part of the issue with it not doing as well because every family
also,
was going to see
seen.
Toy Story 2 at the time. So
yeah. No, it's never a surprise. It's never a surprise if you haven't seen a movie. There are just occasions where it's like, oh, I bet this is one that might be in the S column. This could be in the S column.
I mean, you've seen Eraserhead. So thinking you'd seen Galaxy Quest wasn't a huge stretch.
Eraserhead is one of the horrible things that I've seen, and that was because I was at somebody's house and they put it on TV, and I didn't know how to leave properly, so I never spoke to that person ever again. I walked out, got my car, and I've never seen that friend ever again. I don't have anything in common with you. I don't have anything to say to you. I'm just gone. Bye.
There's also the element of Next Generation, right? You like Next Generation? TNG?
I like.
Star Trek?
I like all. Oh, Danae.
Yeah. Danae.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so there was part of me, too, that wondered because of how Star Trek it is, if it had entered your universe because of that. Like if,
orbit.
Yeah. Your orbit, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but no, that's fine.
But you know, it wasn't
no
on
shade,
TV in
no
my living room.
Yeah, totally get it. Totally get it. Having said that, you have to watch it now. I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
It's more popular now than
that
it
is
was
true.
Then.
That is true.
Why do you think?
Like I said, I think a lot of factors. I think there was just other things out. I think Toy Story 2 was a huge.
No, I mean, like, why is it popular now?
Well,
why do you think it's gaining?
It's a genuinely good movie, and I think it just. You know, its fandom increased over the years.
It took a while for people to find it. Yeah.
I don't really have anything.
Yeah, I agree.
Other to say. I don't know anything other than that.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about the sins. Danae, why don't you kick us off?
I wrote down, there is a famous moment later in this movie when a character says one word, but the audio is another word completely. But here Alexander says, oh, brother, without even moving his lips. And no one ever talks about that.
It's true.
I have several others that I wrote down, but that's the one I'll go with.
All right. Yeah, it's good. It's Stan Winston, you twit. That was really funny to me.
Well, and that's not, I mean, we know that now, right? Because you go back and you watch like movies from like the early 90s and they look better than movies today. And it's mostly because it's Stan Winston.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
That dude was on another planet. He might have been one of the big three, alien, android, or wizard.
Just do the gooey tube again made me laugh. Just the wording on that. Yeah. The idea that they are basing their actions on the show and just showing what complete and utter nonsense that is, that they would be able to build a starship based on the actions of this child who, was probably just, hopped up on candy and
those scenes didn't make any sense. Like, we're supposed to believe there were scenes in the show
just
where
showed
he just,
his hands
like,
on the controls
of him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The idea of them coming out in order after they crash, just that's what the narrator's getting hung up on, just made me laugh. And then I always appreciate a good sinning the forced romantic subplots, and the fact that they're kissing at the end is just ridiculous in this movie, and it's pointed out in such a good way, so I wanted to bring that out as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I mean, they did have a pass, so
sure.
I guess it's not the craziest thing in the world, but it didn't really, it wasn't needed.
Right. Yes. Jonathan, what about you?
His hair is hilarious.
That's right.
Perfect Shatner. Exaggeration called, and I want you to reread the definition of exaggeration.
Mm-hmm.
Penis rock. Just love that pointed out. I also love the specificity of the odds of this dead body hitting the window of Cirrus's ship. 32 million to one. And definitely a Jeremy Sin. This movie definitely saw sneakers, which was
hilarious. That was when they were in the
they're going down like
vents.
Yeah.
Fun stuff. Well, there you go. We did it. We got through 8 different videos. So, and Danae, you kind of snuck in some keeping tabs and comment section.
I did. I wanted to kind of throw those in. I've been waiting on those because we did Guardians so long ago. So yeah. I really wanted to make sure to talk about those.
Jonathan, did you have anything you wanted to sneak in before we go? Since we're already kind of pushing some length here.
I was on a few of these, but the keeping tabs, I mean, it wasn't anything that interesting. I did do some research into Florida and New York law because there was that bit where they're like, you know, he doesn't have a license to practice law in New York. And they say the woman there says some rigmarole about, we're going to let you go mon coitus per senda, or what, I don't know what she says. And we're gonna, you know, we're trying to get the bar to move it up quicker. But I actually, just doing research, I found out that Florida really doesn't let you. He originally had his lawyer's license in Florida, and Florida really doesn't let you transfer anything. So that's the nicest way to put it. I don't know why, but it's hard to get stuff moved from Florida to somewhere else. So he would have had to retake the bar, is what I figured out. And so that was why I wrote that sin. But unfortunately, that's for one that only patrons saw. So that's why that was really the only thing I had. And I also researched New York real estate, because some of the stuff about the apartment and stuff, but it was all pretty accurate. But just New York real estate's really ridiculous, and it's really expensive. And I really don't know how they fit what they fit into that city. It's, oh man, I wish I knew more about architecture, because that city is crazy.
Yeah.
The way it's structured.
It's scary.
Because it's not small, but I mean, it's not huge, right? And there's just so many people there.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's nuts.
Yep, but at least it doesn't change shape every night.
That's true. It is not Dark City.
It is not Dark City.
Kiefer Sutherland's like running around New York, like injecting people.
We managed to sneak a couple bonus things in there, even though we didn't do the full segments. But that is going to do it for Behind the Sins this week. Don't forget to make sure you are subscribed. Go ahead and leave a comment or rating as well. And if you've got anything you want to send us, you can mail it to P.O. Box 881, Republic, Missouri 65738. You can also hang out with us on Twitter. I'm at Aaron Dicer. She is at Danae Says.
DeneeSays.
And he is at SamLoomis13. So for Jonathan Watkins, Danae Hughes, a sex offender Eminem, and myself, we will see you next week.
Happy April Fool's Day! Or is it?
Or is it?
Thanks for listening. Send any feedback to bts@cinemasins.com. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. Find more ways to connect by visiting cinemasins.com/BTS.
AVP, Alien versus Predator.
Okay.
Do that thing, chicken, chicken wing. Woo! That would have been so messy. I almost just spilled water everywhere. Hey, dog, get off me. I care for you. Go away.
Okay, so second of all.
Danae's going to do the show with food in her mouth today. Danae went off on this show.
It would have been like, well, she sent me a thing saying this is going to be a beefy script.
I did.
90 sins and one outtake, just so we know.
I finally get to talk about legends of the Guardians of the Gahuli people.
Yeah.
Gahoo.
Ga-
Yahoo.
All right, well, let's do this show. No outtakes this week. Sorry, guys. We just didn't have time to record stupidity that we usually record. Major apologies. I'm sure Danae made some funny noises when she started recording. That'll be there for you. But apologies on the lack of outtakes, because we ain't got time for that, right?
What?
What? It's going to be beefy. And like, if what we did was beefy, I guess this would be chimichanga-y. It's a lot. It's a massive.
Is chimichanga more than beefy?
It's a big beefy, isn't it? Isn't chimichanga pretty beefy?
Okay, fine. If you put beef in it.
Chimichanga is just fried. I mean, it's pretty much just the same size as a burrito, but fried.
Chicken in it.
Okay. Okay. So it's cow. It's a cow.
It's the full cow.
It's okay. A full cow.
If that was beefy, we're now dealing with a full ranch of bovine.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.